ईश्वराय विद्महे सत्यदेवाय धीमहि तन्नः सर्वप्रचोदयात्। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।
साई राम डियर लिसनर्स एंड वेलकम to Radio Sai Study Circle. This is the fifth episode of the series, and in the last episode, we discussed the principle of diversity, why there is diversity, how did it come about, and how to deal with diversity. And we are very grateful to you, dear listeners, for the number of positive emails that we have received since we have aired this episode. In fact, one avid listener from Chennai, Miss Aarti Krishnan, heard this program even before it was aired on Radio Sai. She eagerly downloaded this from the Radio Sai website once she noticed it in the schedule, and our schedule, you know, is generally done for at least one day in advance, and she was probably the first listener of the fourth episode. And there was another person, Mr. Sai Gopal from Bahrain, who wrote to us saying, "Once I started reading the transcript of the study circle, I was mesmerized and I went on to complete the reading despite other demands on my time. I can state confidently that the session was of highest quality." Miss Hina Malkani from USA said, "I have learnt a lot and I hope to see the world in a different way and understand the true meaning of diversity. With Bhagwan's blessings, we can make a change today and spread love to each and every soul." Mr. Bhanu Shivkumar from New Zealand thanked profusely for the wonderful insights provided and added that it means so much to someone like him who presently lives almost halfway around the world in New Zealand. And then there was an interesting mail from Mr. Arjun Israni from Spain. He said he is the coordinator for the Sai Center in Canary Islands, and often he has found the themes of the study circles coinciding with the topics he is working on at that time. Even recently, as he was preparing for an EHV seminar on unity in diversity to be held just in a couple of days, he found our study circle on the same theme. So he says, you know, "These study circles are truly godsend for me." This is what he says. Like this, dear listeners, we have received quite a few such encouraging mails, and maybe I should stop with just one more. This is from Miss Aruna Narayanan from San Jose, USA, who says, and I quote, "Oh my God, how long have I had this unclear thought about unity in diversity? How long I wanted to know, is having an ambition wrong or is contentment right? Not realizing that they both can actually coexist. Please accept my gratitude for the clear delivery of such concepts." Unquote. And then she makes a request for a study circle on the topic of love. Miss Aruna, if you are listening, yes, we will definitely have a session on love, but today we have something else in store. And for this, let me now request our moderator, Sri Rangarajan sir, to take over and set the ball rolling for today's episode. As always, apart from me and Rangarajan sir, there are three other alumni participating in this discussion: Amay Deshpande, Sai Giridhar and K.M. Ganesh. So, over now to the moderator, Rangarajan sir.
Thank you, Bishu. For today's study circle, we have a very nice story narrated by Bhagwan. This is about the famous violin maker by name Antony from Italy. Why don't we listen to the story in Swami's own voice?
Sure.
అన్నింటి కూడాను ప్రేమనే ప్రధానము.
ఆఫ్ ఆల్ లవ్ ఇస్ ఇంపార్టెంట్.
కానీ ఈ ప్రేమనే పరమాత్మ స్వరూపం.
లవ్ ఇస్ గాడ్.
లివ్ ఇన్ లవ్.
Live in love.
ఈ ప్రేమయందే మనం జీవించాలి.
We have to live in love.
ఇటలీ లోపల గొప్ప వయలనిస్ట్ ఆంటోనీ ఉండేటువంటి వాడు.
There in Italy, a very great violinist by name Anthony was living.
ఈ ఆంటోనీ వయలిన్ అంటే చాలా గొప్ప పేరు.
And the violin of Anthony was highly reputed.
కానీ ఒకనాడు ఈ యొక్క వయలిన్ చేయడానికి ప్రారంభించాడు. ఒక సంవత్సరం కాలాన్ని తీసుకున్నాడు.
Anthony takes one full year to make one violin.
అతని స్నేహితులు వచ్చి, అంతోనీ నీవు కుటుంబీకుడవు కాని ఒక సంవత్సరంలో ఒక వయలిన్ తయారు చేస్తే దీనివల్ల వచ్చేటువంటి ఆదాయం ఏమిటి?
His friend came and said, Anthony, if you take one full year to make one violin, what is the profit?
నీ కుటుంబాన్ని ఏ రీతిగా నీవు సంరక్షించుకోగలవు?
How can you take care of your family?
నీ కాలం ఏ రీతిగా శాంతిగా జీవించగలవు?
How can you live in peace?
అప్పుడు అంతోనీ చెప్పాడు.
Then Anthony said,
My friend, పరమాత్ముడు పూర్ణ స్వరూపుడు.
God is full.
పరిపూర్ణ స్వరూపుడు పరమాత్ముడు.
God is full.
కనుకనే మానవుడు చేసే ప్రతి చిన్న కార్యం కూడాను పరిపూర్ణంగానే ఉంటుండాలి.
As God is one of perfection, whatever man does should be one of perfection
too. అప్పుడే పరిపూర్ణ పరమాత్మకు పరిసంతృప్తి కలుగుతుంది.
There only God, who is the embodiment of perfection, will be satisfied.
కనుక నేను నా కుటుంబం యొక్క తృప్తి కోసం నేను ఈ వయలిన్ చేయటం లేదు.
I don't make this violin to satisfy my family.
నా జీవితం యొక్క ఆనంద నిమిత్తమే నేను ఈ వయలిన్ చేయటం లేదు.
I am not making this violin for my happiness.
పరిపూర్ణుడైన పరమాత్మ తృప్తికై నేను ఈ వయలిన్ చేస్తున్నాను అన్నాడు.
I make this violin to satisfy God, who is embodiment of perfection.
అనగా ప్రతి మానవుడు కూడాను ఏ పని చేసినప్పటికీ ఇది భగవత్ సంతృప్తి కోసం చేయాలి.
సో ఎవ్రీ మ్యాన్ వాట్ ఎవర్ హీ డస్
దీనిని పురస్కరించుకుని వేదము సర్వకర్మ భగవత్ ప్రీత్యార్థం అన్నది.
Therefore it is said that all actions must be offered so as to please God.
So as we heard the story, the punchline of the story is Sarvakarma Bhagavat Prityartham. That is, all actions we do should be done as an offering to the Lord. And here we find this great violinist who was not obsessed with numbers. He was not so anxious about his survival, but all he had in his mind was the talent that God had given him in terms of making violins. He wanted to make the best violin which was worthy of offering to the Lord, who is the embodiment of perfection. And so Swami says he've just made one violin a year, but that really pleased the Lord. So today we would like to discuss this story. And as we see, the main theme arising out of this is one should offer his or her work to the Lord. And the prerequisite, as we can see from this story, is here was Anthony who had this quest for excellence. He wanted to make a perfect violin. So one sub-theme that comes out of this is the quest for excellence or the striving for perfection. And on the other hand, he was not obsessed with numbers, which Swami always says quality is more important than quantity. So these are the two sub-themes which emerge, leading to the final main point of this story is making every action an offering to the Lord. So why don't we start with the first sub-theme, quest for excellence. Now a point comes in here. Let's spend some time on this. Should we really strive for excellence in all that we do?
Yeah, in fact, sir, that is the first question. I think the most, layest of men or the most lamest of men would say, I am very, very happy just not doing any work. So why should I have this quest for excellence in the first place?
And in fact, many people who work, they just take it as a mere aspect of survival. Work is a drudgery. They just want to get rid of it, come back to their home and have a nice time. So where is this whole idea of excellence in work?
At the same time, I think there are a lot of people who strive for excellence. And if you question, why do they strive for excellence? If I ask myself, why do I excel? Or I mean, what do I strive for excellence? I think it's because it gives me happiness.
Okay.
God has gifted each one of us with some abilities and potentialities. And when we are able to translate these potentialities into some kind of achievement, it gives us a great sense of satisfaction. And if we come up with something which is of use to others in society, which is of benefit to others, then it not only gives us a sense of satisfaction, but also a sense of fulfillment.
Right.
And I feel it gives meaning and purpose to our life. So yes, people want to excel, and they want to do it because, you know, they are able to make sense of their existence, almost like they want to create and define their life just like an artist sculpts.
Yeah, I get your point, Vishu. Giridhar, what do you feel? Why should people strive for excellence in the very first place?
So I personally feel that When I strive for excellence, I grow from inside and in various other ways than really the field in which I am trying to excel. For example, if I am playing cricket and I am trying to excel in the game of cricket as a batsman, it improves my concentration, my ability to assess what would the bowler be thinking at that point and how can I, you know, outthink him. These are all the various other factors in which I grow simultaneously as I try to excel as a batsman. So I think in the very process of excellence, growth is a gift that each one is given. So yeah, I think that is one primary motivation for me to strive for excellence.
Ganesh, what about you?
I agree with both Giridhar brother and Abhishek brother. Because when we strive for excellence, we realize the potential that God has given us. I have a small example. If you look at an uncut diamond, we know that it has a tremendous potential of brilliance in it. So the beauty inherent in the diamond prompts us to develop its potential brilliance by chiseling it. Similarly, when we strive for excellence in our work, our profession, or developing any natural talent that God has given us, we manifest that potential that is latent in us. The journey of realizing this potential in us, I believe, is one of the most gratifying experiences of life. Hence, we must strive for excellence.
There's another point that is related, but I want to share it because I many times think about this particular fact. Now, if you examine everyone in the world, there is one feeling common to every person, in fact, every being. And it is this feeling of being wanted, of being loved. And when we excel, you know, then we are wanted. We are appreciated. We are loved. And I feel this is what propels us to do more and more because, you know, we want to feel loved. Ultimately, it's happiness, but, you know, it is this feeling of being wanted.
So you mean people appreciate your excellence?
It's a feeling of being wanted.
What do you feel, Aman?
Somehow, I just feel that without this quest for excellence, I will be just reduced to a machine. As, you know, as Giridhar pointed out, why wouldn't you want to have a bowling machine? Why do you want a bowler? Right? In the same game of cricket, you can have a machine to deliver faster deliveries and, you know, you can have maybe a batting machine and, but why don't we get the same kind of joy, you know, when we look at machines doing it? It's because the fundamental nature of man is to go one up, as he mentioned. So I think the fundamental reason why we always, that quest for excellence is there is because we are not machines. I think I would like to put it just simply that way.
Oh, that's great. So many points have come up, and even when I think over it, why do I strive for being perfect in whatever I do? I feel basically it gives a deep sense of inner satisfaction. Because many a times other people may not appreciate what we think is excellence at work, but it gives us a tremendous sense of satisfaction. So as I see the points that have come up, as Bishu, as you said, it's a source of happiness, fulfillment, and it gives meaning and purpose in life. Work is not just work, but it's much more than that. And then, as Giridhar said, it's personal growth, personal development. And Ganesh talked about tapping the inner potential. And as you rightly said, other people would want you, would love the excellence that you deliver. And the key difference between a machine and a man, as you rightly pointed out, is this striving for that limitless potential that God has given each person. Great. So having made this point that yes, we need to strive for excellence, strive for perfection, above all because that's what man is made about.
Coming back to what we started with,
yeah?
We said there are some people who do not strive for excellence. They are happy with just not doing anything.
Vishwa, I think that's a temporary phenomenon because I've seen many such people who get, I think when they are at the lowest level of what we call as the Maslow's hierarchy, striving for mere survival. Yes, I can understand. But as they grow up this ladder, a point comes when they realize that work is not just merely about work. They start feeling hollow. And that's when they really would like to offer their best, give their best.
I think that's how it really happens.
Though they seem to be happy, there are actually a lot of emptiness in their heart.
There is emptiness in their heart.
And sooner or later it will come out.
Yes.
Yeah, I think no person, once his basic survival has been taken care of, it's always, you know, a matter of going that one step ahead. So even the person who is, you know, fighting for survival and who is just doing his work for survival is also going that one step ahead. Or then a person should be so realized maybe that, you know, he need not do action at all. Which is also, I think, the excellence of the highest order.
But on the other hand, I've even seen a person like a vegetable vendor, you know, on the street who is possibly still struggling for a, you know, basic existence. Also at times delivering wonderful service to the customer with a smile and with so much of love. So possibly it can be done at every point of life. It's a question of attitude.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. So then how do we get this excellence at work? How do we really strive for this perfection? That's the key point.
Yes, sir. In fact, I'm reminded of a very beautiful talk which was given by Steve Jobs at the commencement address in Stanford. Now, where he mentioned that a person, on each one of us, should ask ourselves this question at the beginning of the day. And the question goes as follows. If this was the last day of my life, will I do what I am going to do? Or what is it that I will do if this was the last day of my life? And he went on to say that if for 3 or 4 consecutive days, you're dissatisfied with the answer that you're giving yourself, or the answer is no, I'm not happy with what I'm doing, then be sure that, you know, you're not excelling. So I think this is a very, very nice way that if we can start our day thinking that it's not a negative way of looking at it, but it's just that, you know, the constant retrospection and self-audit that we have to keep doing, that if this was the last day of my life, you know, what are the things that I'm going to do and how am I going to do it? I think this is a good way of bringing out excellence.
Yeah, that is an interesting perspective. But the way to excellence, I think, is hard work. Few will disagree with this. This is what I feel. Still, we know of people who work hard but do not excel. So what is important is not only doing the right thing, but doing the thing right. And generally, we don't go wrong if we have passion along with hard work. Inventions and discoveries happen and legends are created when hard work is coupled with unbridled passion. Let's take the example of Edison. Edison was famous for his inventions. There are more than 1,000 patents in his name. At the same time, there are at least 500 to 600 of his patent applications that were rejected. And when people questioned him about how it felt dealing with so many setbacks, he said, "I have not failed. I have just found 10,000 ways that won't work." So for me, it was not work, it was fun. Actually, I am reminded of a quote of Dr. Abdul Kalam, the former president of India. He said, "Dreams are not what you see when you fall asleep, but those that do not allow you to sleep." I think for excellence, what we need is such kind of passion and commitment.
Yeah, I'm also here tempted to use this, you know, the Japanese management jargon here. Two specific terms, one is called Kaizen and the other is called Pokayoke, where actually they're talking just about excellence. So in those olden days, maybe, you know, prior to the 1900s, a product used to get manufactured and then you used to test it whether, you know, it has any defect. And if it has a defect, you either have to throw it or then, you know, send it for rework. The Japanese looked at the whole thing in a very different way. They just said, why do I need, you know, the product to come out all the way and then check it for defect? Why not keep checking it at every stage for defect? You know, so can I do continuous improvement at every step of the way? And I think if you take this whole thing and put it into our own lives, I think it's a fantastic way. At Bhagavan says, can I look at every thought and say, is this the right thought? Is this the right action? Is this the right word? You know, and why will such a kind of a process, you know, of continuous self-audit and retrospection, why will it not bring excellence? So I think excellence is not just a destination, but it is a process.
It's a continuous journey.
Yes.
Yeah. And also talking of Pokayoke, which you mentioned, is basically it means zero error. That is, you make a process so perfect that you just cannot make an error.
Correct.
A simple thing like a pen drive and a USB port, you can only put it one way. Just imagine what if it were to be possible both ways and you discover one way wouldn't work. So this is how Japanese came up with this whole idea of zero error, wherein you make products in such a way, wherein you design processes in such a way that what comes out is excellent.
Yeah, and I think most of these things we can implement in our life. You know, that's the best part about
yes.
I think there is another aspect, you know, talking about the Japanese work culture itself. Somehow it is there in their culture to think about the overall good of the nation at large, and that seems to be one motivating factor for them to strive for excellence. For example, we have heard of this story of a shoe company where there was a strike and the workers didn't stop working like it happens in many places, but they went on to make only one set of shoes, that is the left shoes, say, so that it can actually not be sold. It cannot be sold, but at the same time, they are not hampering the growth or productivity of the nation at large, because they can go on and produce the right shoes and immediately they are there in the market. So this is a very innovative way, and Dylan, in his paper in a journal called Quality Progress in 1990, he gives a few characteristics of the Japanese culture which inspires them to work in this manner. He says that there is this concept called giri in their culture, which means duty or obligation of an individual to others originating out of gratitude. And it seems the Japanese, you know, they prioritize satisfying others over their own individual satisfaction. But this is one thing which, you know, motivates them to strive harder for, you know, productivity. And even the recent earthquake and tsunami were a great eye-opener, a revelation for most of us. Just an example, there was this great Kanto highway in Naka, which was completely destroyed, so to speak, after the tsunami and earthquake. And they just rebuilt the whole thing in 6 days.
I think the photographs of that is also available.
Yeah, right? It's available. You know, they give the contrast between what it was 6 days before. 6 days later, you can't even make out that there is something which happened there. And Asian Tribune, which reported, one of the agencies which reported this news, they go on to say that Japan is not the only place in the world with renowned engineers for performing impressive tasks, but it just doesn't happen in other countries in 6 days, that is.
That's amazing. I mean, talking of excellence or perfection, I think coming back to Swami, he's the best example one could really have of perfection. Ganesh, can you now give us some examples from Swami's own life?
Yeah, there are many instances we can see from Swami's own life, like switching on the fan and light after entering the interview room and being the last one to come out after switching them off to conserve electricity. Now, one sign of living with excellence is giving what I would say is optimal utilization of resources, because Swami himself says, don't waste food, don't waste energy, don't waste time. One may think by saving few minutes of electricity, what is achieved? But Swami clearly demonstrates that the attitude of conserving is more important, and that only one who is sensitive to the minutest of details can handle bigger things in life. In this context, I remember one more occasion where Swami had instructed some boys to clean the auditorium and had said that he would personally come and inspect the auditorium. Needless to say, the auditorium was literally combed. The floor was mopped, seats were dusted both above and below, window panes were washed, stage was cleaned twice, etc. Finally, when Bhagwan came and all the boys were eagerly awaiting for his praise, Bhagwan just with his one turn of glance looked at one remote corner of the auditorium, and there, I mean, to everybody's consternation, all of them saw that one cobweb was hanging. So, I mean, if you see at a physical level, nothing can escape Swami's eyes. How much more careful we must be when it comes to his omniscience.
And it just shows that Swami's penchant for perfection. Let me narrate what happened on the day of inauguration of the Sri Satyasai Junior Boys Hostel in 1995. That morning, Swami cut the ribbon, and there was plenty of activity around, you know, during any inauguration function, there were bhajans, Vedam procession, elders offering flowers to Swami and all that. And once Swami stepped in, he turned left and his eyes fell on the staircase. The staircase would lead to the second floor of the building. And Swami saw the staircase and he called one of the teachers standing there and said, "Did you notice the railing of the staircase? It starts from the second step." And the boys returned from school in a hurry. This railing is going to hurt them.
Hurt them, right?
Wow. So you should pull the railing to the last step. One thing is Swami's eye for detail, and another thing is, you know, his eye for detail even when all this activity is going around during the inauguration function. And if you look at it, you know, why does Swami have this? It's his concern for us. It's his love. I think that perfection in Swami is because of the love that he has for all of us.
Very true. Swami looks for perfection in, you know, the smallest of things. For example, every drama that students put up, Swami always comes first and then has a look at the students, how their makeup has been done and, you know, whether they are absolutely ready in their costumes or not. And I am reminded of one such instance when we put up a drama called Shri Krishna Rayavaram. where one of our brothers who played the role of Krishna, his makeup was slightly overdone. That is, the shade of blue was slightly darker than it should have been. And of all things, Swami immediately noticed that and he called him and he said, see, I'll give you some time. By the time I go outside and sit, somehow reduce this shade. It is too dark for Krishna.
So obviously, only he can know.
Yeah, obviously, he only knows what was the shade of his skin color when he was Krishna.
In fact, I am reminded of another very, very beautiful experience which was narrated to us by Venkatachalam, sir. So he was mentioning that when the senior boys hostel building was being constructed, Swami used to come and spend a lot of time looking, you know, at every minor detail. And it used to be very painful for everybody to see Swami standing there, you know, and overlooking the whole thing. So he just had the courage to go and tell Bhagwan, in very humble sense, that Swami, you don't strain yourself and we will look after the whole thing. And Swami said, no, you cannot do that. And he said, no, Swami, we can do it.
And
he tried to give some confidence to Bhagwan. So Swami said, okay, fine. Now I'll go from here. By tomorrow morning, three things in a particular room should be over. The furniture work, the electrical work, and the painting work. Can you ensure that? Swami asked. He said, Swami, yeah, that is, it's almost over, and yeah, it is definitely, Swami. So Swami left for the day, and Venkatachalam sir says he stood there personally and supervised the whole thing because he had promised Bhagwan. Yes. And the next day morning at about 9 o'clock, the exact time that Swami had given, Swami's car came near the thing, and even before he could get down, Swami asked, are you sure everything is over? You know, so it was one more kind of a warning, and he was absolutely confident. He said, Swami, everything is over. Whatever you told is ready. And Bhagwan gets down, goes into this, and he said, okay, so just open this particular cupboard. So we have in the hostel, the cupboard is basically a three-tiered structure. Two tires are closed with horizontal and one is vertical, which is like a study table. So Swami said, open the study table and show me. So the study table was opened, and it just happened that the study table was not exactly parallel to the ground. It happened to be missing it by a few degrees. Swami was annoyed. Swami said, see, if you are going to make something like this, how are the boys going to sit? They will get back problems, neck problems. And you know, Swami came up with all these things and you have failed. Furniture work is failed. So that's it. One out of three is gone. Swami said, at least electrical works have you done? And Venkatachalam sir was now a little not that confident. He said, I think, Swami, yes, Swami, electrical works, I think I'm pretty confident. And Swami just raises his head and there is a live wire hanging right on top of Swami Bhagwan's head. And he says, and what is that? And Venkatachalam sir by now was absolutely flat. He said, I am so sorry. And Swami gave him another peace of mind. And finally said, so, you know, it was two out of three was failed. And said, at least the painting work have you done? By now, Venkatachalam sir, you know, was completely flat on the ground. He said, Swami, I have no idea. And Bhagwan, unbelievably, goes and checks one of the window stoppers. You know, to stop the window, there is small wooden blocks.
The back side of it.
Yeah, and he removes it and checks the back side of the window stopper whether that has been painted. And obviously, it was not painted, and Venkatachalam sir got another peace of mind. Okay, that is the kind of, you know, excellence that Bhagwan works with, and he expects from each one of us.
That was an amazing experience. So basically, if you see here, the whole idea is what drives excellence or perfection is not what the other person is looking for. Now, perhaps the back of the stopper is something which no student in the room would have even bothered whether it was painted or not. But it's the question of how I do my work. It's an attitude towards work, towards correct action, and the feeling that I'm doing it for God and God is perfect. Therefore, I would like to actually conclude this sub-theme with another one very striking story of a sculptor. It's a very popular story. Here's a man who goes and he finds a sculptor has carved out a beautiful statue, and it's a very tall one, more than 6 feet, and a very nice, very beautiful looking idol already on the ground, and he's carving one more. So he says, oh, are you making one more idol of the same type? He says, no, see, the problem is there is a defect in that statue, and so I'm making one more. And the man was struck because here was a very beautiful, exquisite artwork. And so he was wondering, what's the problem with this? Then he says, no, you look at the nose. There is a small scratch just below the nose. So he just walks right till the nose and he's hardly able to see a small scratch. And then he says, where are you going to erect this? He says, on the top of the hill. So then this man says, first of all, the statue is so tall. You're going to erect it on the top of the hill. He says, hey, sculptor, tell me who in the world is going to observe that small scratch below the nose? And the sculptor says, I can see it. See, this is, I think, what Swami is trying to teach us, that God has made you perfect. As he said in the story, you're a part of God and God is perfect, so you have to be perfect.
You are listening to the fifth episode of our series, Radio Sai Study Circle, where five former students of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning discuss how to understand and apply Baba's teachings in our daily lives. Today, the topic for their discussion is cultivating the right attitude towards work. Till now, each of them shared their views on what motivates one to excel and how they learned the lessons of perfection in action from Baba himself. Let us see what more they have in store for us, what suggestions they have for all of us, so that work for us is not a burden or a mere tiring routine, but can be transformed into a fulfilling spiritual exercise. Let us go back to the moderator, Mr. G.S. Srirangarajan.
And now we'll move to the second sub-theme, which is about quality and quantity. Many times in life, we get so obsessed with numbers. I have to achieve so many things. I have to achieve this goal. So many numbers. I have to produce so many items. And in that process, we just let quality go off. So how do we really strike this balance? Amay, what do you think about this aspect?
Yeah, in fact, I'm reminded here once again of, you know, how much importance Swami gives to quality. It so happened that on one occasion, I was a schoolboy and the university students had not scored as good marks as Bhagwan was expecting. And, you know, the results had gone to Bhagwan and he was quite disappointed with the performance of the students. He came out and I still very vividly remember he stood right in the middle of the veranda in Prashanthi Nilayam and says, was so disappointed. He says, I don't want barrels of donkey milk. I want a teaspoon of cow's milk.
That's a very, fair. Yeah. Swami repeats that statement so often.
Yeah, a teaspoon of cow's milk is better than barrels of donkey milk. And then he went on to say, you are not able to respect one mother's love. The mother that sent you over here, how can you respect 1,000 mother's love? That is the amount of importance that Swami gives to quality.
In this context of quality versus quantity, I'm reminded here of an incident narrated by Mrs. Geeta Ram, which occurred sometime in 1970. Swami had called Mrs. Geeta Ram and few other devotees for an interview. There was one particular lady in this interview room who was requesting Swami again and again to come to her hometown, even though Swami was apparently ignoring her. Then finally Swami looked at her and said, I have not only come to your town, but I have even come to your home. Then he asked, how is the seva going on in your town? She said that it was going on well. In those days, Swami used to suggest that every day when we cook, we keep a morsel of rice and collect it from every house and give it to somebody so that we have the feeling of doing some service every day. In that context, Swami asked the lady, are you giving 2 rupee rice or 5 rupee rice? She replied reluctantly, good rice, Swami. Swami retorted, what? For poor people, for Narayan Seva, you give 2 rupee rice and for family 5 rupee rice. 2 rupee rice is not clean and is full of stones. That is what you have been giving. Even then, the lady had the audacity to say, no, Swami. Then Swami got up from the chair and said, you don't believe me. 2 years back, I came to your house as a beggar and you gave me rice which was saved for Narayan Seva. You got it in a red cloth and gave it to me. You don't believe me? Wait. He went inside to the inner room. He came out with a red bag and said, did you not give this to me? You can imagine the plight of the poor lady. The basic message which Swami was trying to convey was to do service with love, and that quality is far more important than quantity. If you don't see Sai in the person whom you're serving, then please don't do any service.
Yeah. You know, this, the quality of intention is so important. And actually at this point I cannot but recall that famous incident related to the construction of the super speciality hospital. A small boy who was studying that time from his school, maybe probably in the 8th or 9th class, when he heard about the construction of the hospital, you know, he had this intense desire to contribute in some small way. So what he did was, he started saving his pocket money and, you know, doing little things like washing his own clothes and, you know, not giving to the washerman and so on. And so he did this for a few days and he was able to save 100 rupees. And then he came to the darshan with that money and he offered a letter to Swami in which he said, "Swami, so many devotees give you so much. I do not have anything to give you materially. You know, all I have is this 100 rupee note. When you are constructing this 100 crore hospital, Swami, please, will you be gracious enough to accept this? Even if one brick can be bought with this money, I'll be so happy." You know, Swami was so moved reading this letter. He rushed out of the interview room with this piece of paper in hand. He asked for this boy and he read that letter again and again. For the next 1 hour, he kept on talking about this boy and lauding his devotion and his sincerity of love that he had in his heart for Swami. And he even said, you know, this 100 rupees is more valuable for me than the huge donations that I have received from others. I mean, I think this is
a quality of
better example than this too.
Yeah, quality of intention is
important. Yeah, and it's above all the impact factor. See, the impact that this 100 rupee note had made. Same is the case with Antonio's violins today. I mean, they are auctioned for millions of dollars because the type of music that this violin can produce is not possible with other run-of-the-mill violins. And that's where the number is not so important, but it's the impact that even a small number could make. Take, for example, Anna Hazare, who is very much in the news today, a social activist and a Gandhian. There has been this feeling against corruption so much in our country, in India, but yet nobody could do much. It's been going on right from the time we got independence, but it's reached a climax and today we have seen one person who was able to gear so much of leveraging power against corruption that today the Lokpal bill or the anti-corruption bill is actually on the move. For that matter, even a person like Nelson Mandela, who was able to bring such a revolution in Africa, or Martin Luther King, who was responsible for the abolition of slavery. So all these are examples to show that it's really not huge numbers or a mass production which matters, but even small numbers have this leveraging power.
Right, I'm reminded of Swami Vivekananda. And you know, one quote of Swami Vivekananda which comes to my mind. He says, "You wholehearted, sincere and energetic men and women can do more in a year than a mob in a century."
Yeah, and in fact, I've heard Swami saying the same thing, that if I have 10 good students, it is enough, I will change the whole world. And of course, Swami himself is an example to show how one person with this inner strength and the power of dharma can literally create a revolution in the whole world. But this brings me to the other part of the, or maybe the other side of the coin. Does it mean then that you can never achieve perfection or excellence with large numbers? I think we should spend some time on this. So let's discuss about this. Does it mean quality or excellence does not go hand in hand with large numbers?
I think in my perspective, from what we have seen of what Bhagwan has done, is in fact he's been able to bring the two together. For example, if you look at the magnificent super speciality hospital, when Swami announced on 23rd November 1990, that, you know, a huge hospital is going to come 1 year from now, and most people in the world, including the architect of the super speciality, kind of just wrote off saying for such a thing in a developed country would take about 7 years, and Swami is talking about 7 months. What ultimately came out is a palatial building that we see today. Swami did not compromise saying that, okay, so anyway, we talked about quality, and so let's make a small little hospital.
Or let's make a small one floor, half a building.
Yes. He, in fact, was able to match that. That is one thing. The second is the beautiful, the magnificent Chaitanya Jyoti Museum that most of us have seen. Again, there was just 7 months left, you know, for the construction of that mammoth building. And there was a huge hill upon which it was supposed to come. So here was a very daunting task that you had to have a quality structure
Okay, but it had to be big. That means it had to be gigantic also. So they actually innovated. And I think that's the point that I'm trying to make here, is that if you want to actually match quality along with quantity, there is a way, and I think that is innovation. What they were able to achieve in Chaitanya Jyoti was, generally we have, you know, the bottom to top construction of any building, but Chaitanya Jyoti was constructed in a parallel sequence. Okay, not horizontal, but vertical. Okay. So even as they were blasting the rocks on one end, the construction at the other end had already begun.
Amazing.
Okay, and which required precision, no doubt about it. So quality was there, but they did not sacrifice quantity for it.
In fact, I think Swami time and again teaches us students about this by creating these pressure situations. For example, there was a very important dignitary who visited Prashanthi Nilayam, and Swami wanted his students to put up a program, a drama, for 45 minutes in front of him, a full-fledged drama. But the time that was really available for the students to prepare for such a program was really 3 days. Normally, a program of this nature is done in, say, 10 days or probably a week's time or
20 days
or even more. So, but then this time we had only 3 days, and what it did is it forced us to innovate. We started thinking differently. Normally, the usual routine would be that, you know, we think of the story, then write down the cast, then write the script, then the script would go to the music group, then to the sets group, the costume group, and eventually a program would build, and we would practice, and of course, all this would succeed only because of Swami's grace. But then this time, we had just 3 days to accomplish all this. And lo and behold, Swami gave us a new way of doing things. And it so happened that as the story was thought about, the script was written simultaneously, the characters were, you know, casted at the same time, all of them were there together in one room. So everybody were there, and in no time, that is in 2 days' time, it was all ready. And Swami came and watched, and let me say it was a half-baked program even when Swami came and watched. But the kind of inspiration that he gave by his personal presence there, it inspired us even more. And the day we put up the program, that is the third day from the day we started preparing for it, it was a grand success by his grace.
And I also recall, Giridhar, that if I'm not mistaken, you were supposed to put it in the Sai Kulwant Hall initially.
Yes,
and
yes.
Just the night before, Bhagwan gave instructions that it should be put up in the college auditorium.
Which is much
where
smaller.
The dimensions are, yes, totally different. I just do not know how you manage with the sets.
And that is really...
So again, you know, I mean, all this goes to show that, you know, quantity need not be compromised with quality.
Great. So I think we have made the point very clear that it's not that quantity cannot be achieved along with excellence. And in fact, that's what I think Six Sigma is all about. Talking of Motorola, where this whole concept of Six Sigma originated, which means less than 3.4 defects per million opportunities, is all about striving for excellence along with quantity. Look at the Dabbawalas, for example, in Mumbai. They deliver food in tiffin carriers to more than thousands of people in the city of Mumbai, but they have reached levels which are far beyond even Six Sigma. And therefore, so many organizations have done a case study on the Dabbawalas. So therefore, the point is, it is possible to achieve excellence. It is possible to strive for perfection. It's not that it's going to be at the cost of numbers. And this is where I would like to touch upon the aspect of process focus and product focus. As they say, you really cannot play a good game of tennis and win with your eye on the scoreboard all the time. So it's basically that you need to really have a very good process and invest all your time and effort in designing a good process and trying to make it as perfect as possible, and the product is already there for you. Look at the way God creates human beings, right? The 9 months when the child stays in the womb is such a perfect process that what you get out is a unique product at the end. So I think it's a whole focus should be on the process more than the output or more than, you know, what's going to come at the end of it, because that's built into the way you do it.
Yeah. You concentrate on the quality of the process rather than the quality of the product.
Great. So I think we have now dealt with these two parts. That is, one being striving for perfection and excellence, and the other one being, yes, quality, but that does not mean no quantity, but quantity with perfection or quantity with excellence. And if one would do this, I believe the next step would be much easier. That is offering the action to the Lord. But there is a little confusion here. If we are able to do just these two, do you really think it's necessary to bring God into the picture? Because that's what one would say, okay, fine, we believe in excellence and yes, we understand quality is very important, need not be just quantity. But why are we bringing in God here and saying that no, you must offer your action to the God?
If your focus is on this third aspect, which is offering everything to God, automatically, you know, excellence, quality, everything is taken care of.
But again, we come back to the other side of it. If you are striving for excellence and you have a focus on the quality, why should we bring in God?
I feel action is fundamental. I mean, action is inevitable. Again, we can divide it as binding action and liberating action. That's what Swami says in Dhyanavaini also. If you offer it to God, then that very act of performing any action becomes liberating. Whereas if you have the motive of result, I mean, then it becomes a binding action. And then again, your soul is stuck up in the unending cycle of birth and death. So the moment you offer it to God, then that the very act becomes liberating.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the perspective. I would give a slightly different perspective. My understanding is, if you do it for your own excellence or for your own achievement or name or fame, at some point of time, you are going to get disappointed or you will get elated. You know, you're going to be caught up in this quagmire of the opposites. If I do not have that perspective that I'm doing this for God or the person who I'm serving is God, then there's a very, very high probability of it reaching to the point where, you know what, I am serving, I am great, or the name or fame, you know, or yeah, the ego. Or in another case, if I am not able to deliver it, then I'm disappointed. Or if I do not get the appreciation for the work I've done, I'm disappointed. But the same thing, if I just bring God into the whole perspective, everything changes because the Lord who is seated in my heart is appreciating me. Okay, the person who I'm serving, I'm able to recognize that he is God and therefore I don't need the appreciation. So it's a kind of a win-win situation the moment you get God into the whole
thing. That is what distinguishes all the Satyasaya organizations from other organizations. The service activities of our organization, in fact, other day I read the news about one service activity is going on in US and one of the volunteers said, I do not want to go to the service activity on some days because people praise so much the food that I have cooked. You know, it's a place where everybody cooks some part of the food and then they serve the poor. Because she says, I don't want that ego to come in.
In fact, yeah, that's the key point, that when you merely strive for excellence, focus on quality just for the heck of it, you consciously or unconsciously look for a reward. And as we know from typical human experience, that rewards really do not come at your beck and call. And so what happens is, if you do not get it, you get disappointed, as Amay said. And so it's not sustainable. And that is why we bring in God, because when you say, I'm offering it to God, that itself is a reward, which gives you what Swami calls as atmatrupti, a deep sense of satisfaction wherein you're not looking for something outside you, but it is an inward journey. So great, that makes it clear that we really need to bring in God into our lives. But Ganesh, can you give an example of some experience of maybe a student or somebody or a devotee wherein he really makes this offering to the Lord so that we get a better clarity about this whole idea?
There was one occasion, sir, when Swami's students had prayed for an opportunity to put a mythological drama in front of Swami. There was one scene that depicted the famous episode where King Parikshit, driven by intolerable thirst, puts a dead snake around sage Samika's neck for not responding to his desperate call for water. Well, this scene was just a small scene in the entire drama, and there were many other important characters like Krishna and Pandavas who would have caught Swami's attention. Yet, at the end of the drama, Swami called this boy who had played the role of King Parikshit and materialized a diamond ring and blessed him. Now, all are wondering why Swami was impressed by this character, which had a 1 minute appearance in the entire drama of 1 hour, until the boy revealed that he had not sipped even a drop of water for the last 24 hours to get the actual feelings of King Parikshit. That type of commitment and that inner feeling of the student to give the best of best as an offering to Swami, however small, was acknowledged by Bhagwan, who is the indweller.
Let me narrate a personal anecdote. This happened when I was in the school. In those days, we used to have exhibitions, and Swami used to come and spend a few time looking at the exhibits done by the boys, and it used to happen class-wise. And generally, we used to make these exhibits during the first semester. And we would call Swami during fag end of the first semester. And in that year, I remember, our teacher in charge said, why don't we do these exhibits in the vacation time itself. So before we went for summer vacation, he gave each one of us a paragraph of Satisai Speaks and said, you know, you try to create an exhibit based on this message. So I was really very serious about this. And my father being a civil engineer, I had the help of some carpenters and I created a temple, because that was the message. That's about prayer and all that. And so when I came back, I was actually a bit astonished to find that I was the only boy who had actually really absolutely serious about this and had come back with a huge model from home. And of course, once the news came that Swami is coming, all the boys got into action and they made beautiful models, which were actually all working models. And mine was actually a static model. There's actually nothing working. There is nothing to involve Swami. There was nothing moving there, you know. But when Swami came, he spent so much time with me. Even though my model was actually nothing fascinating, so to speak. It was just a static model. Just a wooden model of a temple. But Swami, you know, Swami created conversations out of nothing. He started commenting on the wood, on the boy who was praying, on the color of the dress that boy was praying and all that. And it was those very first interactions with Bhagwan, and it really made me happy. But when I reflect on it later, I feel it was that, you know, that sincere feeling of doing it for Swami and taking it very seriously is what that made purity the difference. The feeling to offer it very nicely to Swami is what probably rewarded.
I'm reminded of one more incident that demonstrates the God's nature of Bhava Priya, not Bahya Priya. It was the first Gram Seva in the year 2000. As it was the first day of the Gram Seva, due to some reason, there was some delay in dispatching food prasadam to Brahmanapalli, one of the far-off villages. Meanwhile, there were some students who had finished serving in the nearby Jankampalli village and had just returned from Seva. Seeing the canter for Brahmanapalli getting started so late, they thought they can join them as the desire to serve in them was not yet quenched. By the time these boys had returned after Seva to ashram, it was 4:30 p.m. and Swami was already inside the interview room. Hearing the jai jaikar of this last batch of boys as they entered the ashram from Brahmanapalli, Swami immediately came out of interview room and sent word for these boys. These boys, who had done seva almost throughout the day, came running towards Swami, who was by now standing on the portico. Swami was visibly ecstatic with the spirit in which these boys had done tireless seva throughout the day, that he told all the boys to take Pad Namaskar. It was then that the boys noticed their soiled and dirty palm, which was black due to the soot of the vessels that they were shifting. They didn't know what to do. Could they touch Swami's feet with those soiled hands? Swami immediately gauged the situation and told them to take Pad Namaskar in spite of their dirty hands, as the offering they had done to village folks filled with Swami's love had already reached Swami. Needless to say, the boys fell at Bhagwan's feet with tears of joy and gratitude.
I think it's all about, what's emerging is basically the mindset. You know, this typical story of the people building a church, they go and ask one person, he says, you know, I'm earning my livelihood. The other worker says, no, I'm actually making a building. But yet another man says, no, I'm actually making a church for my Lord. So it's all about the way you look at your work. Is it not, Amay?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm reminded of this, another very famous personality, Baba Amte. When people used to ask him, why don't you visit the, you know, the nearby temple of Vishnu? He used to very simply say, I find so many of my Vishnus sitting right outside my house, you know, which were all the
lepers.
The lepers. You know, so why do I need to go to a temple when my Narayana is coming to me, in fact? So I think it's all about, you know, that seeing the Lord in whatever you do will automatically, you know, result in quality and the excellence of work.
In fact, Khalil Gibran says, work is love made visible.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
That's really wonderful. Work is love made visible.
In fact, if I may conclude, because we have discussed so much about it, but this is a beautiful anecdote that comes to my mind. Long back once, I had been to the hospital, super specialty hospital, to donate blood. And just after donating the blood, we were sitting in the blood bank over there, and suddenly we hear this announcement that Bhagwan is visiting the hospital. Okay. So we were so excited, so we thought, why don't we sit there, and just in case, you know, we get to have a glimpse of Bhagwan. And just within a few seconds, it so happened that Swami actually came to the blood bank. The blood bank itself. He had brought some guests along with him, and he was showing them around as a, you know, typical host. He was showing them the latest equipments that were there. And as we were seated there, he suddenly comes there, and he points at me and tells them that, you know, this man is a lecturer in our institute. And I was elated that here was Swami interacting. And then suddenly out of the blue, Swami asks me in Hindi, he said, blood diya? He said, did you give blood? And I was thrilled. I said, here's an opportunity to declare to Bhagwan that, yes, I have done this, you know, act of great nobility. So I said, yes, Swami, I have given blood. And the moment I said that, Swami suddenly put on a very, you know, the same Swami was so excited, put on a very dull face. He said, oh, lekin mujhe nahi diya. You didn't give it to me. So I was left dumbfounded, and before I could even respond, you know, Swami was already on his way, as he typically does. And it took me so many months to brood over this, introspect, and finally I realized that perhaps what Swami meant was, you know, when I go back to that day, the feeling in my heart was, here I am giving blood to a patient. But perhaps Swami wanted me to realize that I'm not giving blood to a patient, but I'm giving blood to the God, to Swami in that patient. So I think if whenever we do any work or any act, if you remember this aspect, that we are actually catering or delivering not to the customer or not to my boss or not to my colleague, but to Swami in each one of them, then I think automatically excellence will come in, quality will come in, and we would have offered our action to the Lord. So I think with these few words, let us close the study circle again with the same feeling that this study circle itself is an offering we make to our beloved Bhagwan. And let's pray it brings joy and a tremendous sense of satisfaction to us in our hearts and also to our listeners.
Shanti, shanti, shanti.
Thank you very much, sir, for moderating this session, and you brothers for participating in this session. Dear listeners, this was an episode of our series Radio Sai Study Circle. We definitely enjoyed offering this to you. Please tell us what you feel about this program. As always, you can send in your emails generously to listener@radiosai.org. Please do take a minute off to let us know what you feel, because that will help us to serve you better. This episode was recorded in the studios of Radio Sai in April 2011. To read the text of this program, you may visit our website, radiosai.org. Thank you very much. Sai Ram.